there's an imbalance in this relationship between listener and podcast maker. Because I'm transmitting this out of my mouth. It's mouth stuff. In an ideal world, it would go in through your mouth, but that's not how we're designed. In an ideal world where you didn't have to broadcast things as sound waves or something, stuff would come out of my mouth, content. It would travel over, just as sound waves do, it would travel over to you wherever you are, into your mouth, intact in the way intended, in the sounds I made. But that's not how the senses work. If I say something to my mouth, it has to go to your ears and then be interpreted through your brain. It never goes to your mouth. It never ends up in your mouth at all. So that's a bit of an imbalance. If you're going to transmit pure talk into someone, at the very least, even if you could transmit it to your mouth, it couldn't be converted into whatever it's converted in to go down through the internet pipes. No, you'd have to have a hollow pipe that goes straight from my mouth to your mouth, which would make it difficult to edit and do any sound production on it. So it'd sound terrible for a start. And you'd be feeling the vibrations coming into your mouth before you even hear the sounds. It'd be horrible. You couldn't even do what I think kids used to do. Each of you hold a tin can and you tie a piece of string to it and the sound supposedly travels along the piece of string. That wouldn't even work for this because that's carrying vibrations. I wanted to carry the actual vocal sounds, not the vibrations caused by the sounds. I wanted to cause the actual sound. I want to pipe them straight from my mouth into yours. And as far as I can ascertain, there's no way to do that. Either in the modern world with all our technology or in the old world where you just have the tin cans and stuff. When the kids are using those tin cans, one of them has it held to their ear and the other one has it held to their mouth. So, no, there's no transmitting of words from mouth to mouth. It could have gone either way, our civilization. We got to a point where we invented the wheel and the wheel was round. In another reality, we could have invented the wheel and the wheel could be spherical, or we might have never invented the wheel or learned how to move. So just as that, we might have never discovered fire. We might have discovered something else instead. We might have never invented sound transmission in the form of waves or electronica. Mightn't even have evolved ears or hearing. We'd have just transmitted sounds directly from mouth to mouth through a pipe for hygiene purposes, from one mouth to the other. We had developed differently our civilization. What does no point wishing and hoping and hoping and praying and wishing and hoping and hoping and wishing and hoping and wishing and praying and hoping and wishing and praying and hoping. That's a song. Might be a Motown song, I'm not sure. I think I've mostly heard it on some commercial somewhere. But no, there's no point sitting around doing that thing that they say in the song. That's not the reality we live in, so we have to just make do with the system we have. There's a big pile of shit in here now. Not that type of shit. Not that type of shit. Shit can mean a lot of things. It doesn't always mean feces. No. If you're one of those people who goes by the dictionary definition of everything, your life is probably hell. Because every time I say the word shit, your mind straight away goes to a mental image of a brown curved thing. Or else you think of a more watered down version of that. When I say shit, I'm very rarely talking about shit. In fact, when I am talking about shit, I say feces or something. I don't say shit. I use shit as a slang word. Make a mental note to yourself. If you're one of those people, just make a mental note in your head. Whenever I listen to this podcast and I hear the word shit, I now know for absolute certain, because it's being told to me today straight out, that when I hear the word shit, it's never about feces. Tell yourself that now. And that'll make this podcast a lot more enjoyable for you. This podcast will be your safe place where you can come and hear the word shit being used and be guaranteed There's never a reference to feces. It'll be great. You have a little break. And then you go off and listen to other podcasts where people do say shit and they're talking about feces. Usually some American thing with two or three young people, one of whom is a nerd who has a podcast and the other two are trying to be comedians. They're doing open mics and they go on these podcasts where there's three 20-something men talking and they say words like that. They say shit, 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 and they'll be actually talking about shit. They'll be telling a story about a time they actually shit their pants. In fact, there's a classic episode of Nobody Likes Onions, I believe, where the host, let's not go into that. Suffice to say, you listen to something like, oh, I shit my pants. Unfortunately, then you can't tell yourself, oh, they're not talking about shit. I shit my pants just means something else. It means I got a fright or something, or I hiccuped. No, he's actually talking about the time he shit his pants. Anyway, you can tell yourself now that when you listen to this particular podcast, you don't have to be on your guard all the time. You can say, if I hear the word shit, I know for a fact now he's not actually talking about feces. That's what I would do if I were you. Well, who really knows what they would do if they were you? I don't know what I would do if I were you. I may have opinions now about what I would do if I were you. If it all came to a head and somehow I became you. Like in those movies, Trading Places or something, where Eddie Murphy swaps places with some rich fella. I can't say what I would do if I were you. You don't know until you're you. You don't know what I would do if I were you. And even if I became you, you would still not find out, because you wouldn't be you anymore. You see this a lot on Star Trek The Next Generation. Some alien comes in and takes over one of the crew members' minds. And then at the end of the episode, everything gets fixed and the crew member says, oh, I don't really remember anything. I felt like I was just at the back of the room, quietly observing. I think I heard Captain What's-His-Name say the word shit. And to be honest, I think that's what triggered me to come back out and fight for my right to party. Well, you're not fighting for your right to party. You're fighting for your right to exist in that instance. None of us are ever going to have to deal with anything like that. None of us is going into space. You're not going into space. I'm not going into space. Nobody's going into space. Nobody's going, not even your dog. Your dog is not going into space. Although now did you mention it? There was a thing in the news yesterday that said Russians sent thousands of flies and mice into space and they've come back and landed or something. I didn't read that article. They called it a Noah's Ark for some reason, the Russians. They're calling this Noah's Ark. That doesn't seem to make sense. Is the flood over or whatever they were trying to survive? Surely if you're putting a Noah's Ark into space, that's for if we ever get wiped out to start flies and mice all over again. Why would they come straight back now? Clearly, whatever emergency they're planning for hasn't happened yet, hasn't ended yet. It's like the fourth time in a month that I've mentioned Noah's Ark. So let's move on from that. No more Noah's Ark. It's getting ridiculous. This isn't a fucking Bible studies class. Not that there's anything wrong with a fucking Bible studies class. It's just, that's not what this is. I've never been a member of any religion that has a Sunday school tradition. I only see them on Little House on the Prairie and other dramas from America. You have these Sunday schools. You send your kids to school from Monday to Friday. And usually in these dramas, the school is a little schoolhouse. There's one woman who's the teacher who does everything. She's the headmistress and the teacher and the janitor. She runs the building. She rings the bell. Come in, children. Come on into the schoolhouse. And then she teaches them all day and then they go home. Those programs, you also see the kids on a Sunday, they go to Sunday school. I presume they go to mass and then they go to Sunday school. Maybe the parents go to the pub while they're in Sunday school. What do you learn in Sunday school? I suppose there are uses other than religions for Sunday school. There are things that a teacher who you have from Monday to Friday never gets a chance. A teacher never gets a chance to say, kids, it's the weekend now, we can get our hair down, you don't have to get up early, so we can just party all night. Oh no, that would have to be a Saturday school. If you had a Saturday school, the teacher would go, oh, you don't have to be up early in the morning. is the one day of the week when you don't have to get up early in the morning so we can wear ourselves out and be exhausted, because it's a good sleep ahead of us. It's not even the school night. Now, this would be assuming you're not going to Sunday school as well. You'd be going to Saturday school and the Sunday would be your day of rest. They just go nuts in Saturday school. They have a big party, run around having a big sports day, and then they run around having the disco, and then they run around drinking cider, and then they run around doing drugs, and then they run around eating sugar. And then it gets to around 6 o'clock in the evening, and the teacher says, isn't this great? We couldn't do this on a weekday, on a school night. But you need a good long sleep after this, and you wouldn't be able to get up the next morning. In fact, you couldn't even do this in Sunday school for that reason, because you have school the next day. But we're doing it on a Saturday. For once in our lives, we can do this on a Saturday, and we don't have to worry about anything, so we can go nuts, do the Saturday school right up until 6, 7 in the evening, then send you home. Doesn't matter if you don't get to bed straight away, because you don't have to get up early in the morning. I suppose you could do that on a Friday as well in the normal school, because there's no school the next day. But then you have the problem with the Friday evening traffic. You don't want your kids going home at 6 o'clock on their Friday evening. The traffic is absolutely fucking nuts on a Friday evening rush hour, so you don't want that. Maybe you do the Saturday school thing once every 6 weeks or so, and the teacher plans her syllabus, and when she comes across things that would be best taught on the weekend rather than the weekday, she sets them aside for the next Saturday school week. You don't have to do a heavy week. So maybe you do a few Saturdays and a few Sundays and a few bank holidays. Now, would that mean you'd have to take them a day off during the week to balance that? No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't. Because that wouldn't work. Well, it would work. The kids would be happy, but no. The parents need you to be away all day, Monday to Friday, from September to June, so they can go out, get out of the house and do whatever they do. You can't be just randomly having kids going home in the middle of the week and saying, oh, we're going to bring them on Saturday instead. No, bring them on Saturday as well. But they'll enjoy the novelty. The kids won't complain. They'll love the novelty of going into school on a Saturday. And it'll be a nice surprise, because the kids will have seen all these Sunday school episodes of various American TV dramas, and they're going to assume there's going to be something hideous like that. But then they get there and they find out, no, it's all fun. We're going to go to dance around and do a sports day, have an egg and spoon race. Do you have egg and spoon races abroad? You probably don't. We used to have. Every school I went to, they'd have an annual sports day. And one of the events would be an egg and spoon race. Everyone gets handed a spoon. I can't remember if it's a teaspoon or a big tablespoon, because I usually eat an egg with a teaspoon. It would have to be a fairly big egg for you to get a tablespoon into it, because that's too big. But they give you a spoon and they give you an egg. An uncooked egg. Well, as far as we knew, they told us they were uncooked. And the idea was, it all lined up and someone would go, 3, 2, 1, go. And they'd shoot. Well, over here, they don't fire a starting pistol. So they go, 3, 2, 1, go. And then the kids would start running as fast as they could without dropping the egg. You'd hold the spoon level and the egg would be in the spoon. You'd have it held out in front of you and say, this better not fall or I've lost. Because if you get to the finish line, but your egg doesn't get to the finish line, you haven't won. Even if you get there first, you haven't won. I think that's how it worked anyway. It's not about who gets to the finish line first. It's who gets their egg to the finish line first. I suppose that's a good life lesson for kids. It's all very well having an egg and bringing it with you, but you have to bring it to completion. Look after it properly. Get it to the finish line. If you're a parent and you have kids, you have to raise them to completion. Think of the egg as a child. You might well get to the winning line, but if your egg isn't with you, you've dropped it along the way, then you failed. Well, you haven't failed, you just haven't won. You may even be a runner-up, depending on how many people are doing it. I got a runner-up prize once in an Irish language speaking competition I was sent to by the school. And this was on a Sunday, incidentally. That's the nearest I ever got to a Sunday school. A teacher sent me to some event. in a town called Ockram on the foot of the Wicklow Mountains, and they'd call each kid up and you'd have something our children our age would not normally be exposed to, but I was exposed to it pretty much like an exam with this fella, a conversation in Irish. And I got a runners-up certificate, some sort of certificate of merit. I remember being all proud of myself. I could barely speak a word of Irish. It was absolute nonsense, but I won something. It was great. I won a certificate of going to this thing, I suppose, which most of the class didn't go to that thing. Only about 4 of us went, so already we were ahead of everyone else. There was about 38 people in that class, so I suppose I was in the top 5 in a way. In another way, it was rather insulting to me. Oh, here's your little runners-up certificate, aren't you? Great. I'd pat you on the head, but you seem to have bits, and there's kids from schools all over the county and neighbouring counties here, and we don't want to spread nits. Because if I pat your head, I have to pat the other kids' heads as well. And that's just going to be a cesspit of nits. Not that there's anything terrible about nits, it's just basically dandruff. But who wants dandruff at that age? Nobody signs up for these things to get dandruff or nits. They just don't. And when they get it, it's not considered a bonus. It's a bad thing. Is dandruff the one that's an egg laid by the nits? Or is the nit an egg laid by the dandruff? I can never remember. If there was nits going around, your parent would get what they call a fine tooth comb. It's basically a series of 20 little knives arranged in the shape of a comb, a metal comb, and they'd scrape this through your hair, scrape the scalp off you. You'd end up covered in rows and rows of parallel cuts from these things, these blades on these so-called fine tooth combs, dragging 20 or 30 blades along your head at the same time. At least they were parallel, so they made a pattern. So it looked somewhat impressive. You got to be cool. One of the few cool things that would be tolerated in the school. You couldn't grow your hair long. That wasn't tolerated in those days. Couldn't get a tattoo. That's just no-no. Your parents would get locked up and you'd be sent into care. You couldn't go around wearing earrings. No, but if you get your parents to scrape your head off with a fine tooth comb, if they do it in a good pattern, they start at the front at your forehead and they comb back. Comb back, they go back at the middle, then move the comb to the left a bit and go front to back, front to back, front to back all the way around. Then that would look very impressive, at least to a child. It would look impressive to me as well. I think that would be impressive. I've never seen it done. I think that would be impressive. If you have a child, you need to treat for nits with a fine tooth comb. Don't intentionally give them nits just to make a submission for this podcast. But if you happen to do that and you get to do the parallel cuts all the way around, I'd love to see an anonymized picture of that. I don't recommend listening to any of the first 500 episodes of this podcast. But some older listeners may remember from the old days, a very early episode. I think it was in the early 100s. I did an episode called This Was Inevitable. And that episode was yesterday taken down automatically from Spotify because it was said to be too much music. It was predominantly music, they said. Now, that episode consisted of me saying hello and then saying 1.5 sentences and then just going ah for the next 28 minutes. I stretched it out. I think I stretched it out electronically. I'm not sure. I stretched out the ah. So I went on for the rest of a half hour episode, and the Spotify thing detected that as being music. So my going ah, as I did a lot in the early days with this podcast, before I used to edit and before I used to not say ah so much, is considered music by Spotify. They're the experts in music. They said you're not allowed to have a podcast episode that's predominantly music. And this one is predominantly music. So they took it down. It's being put back up. Don't worry. But no. So that's great. My music has been endorsed now. I wasn't even playing my harmonica on that episode. It was a cappello. I just went, ah. Is that a cappello? I think it is. I think it wasn't meant to be musical. It was just basically a vocal tick. I go, ah. I used to start sentences with ah all the time. And they used to middle sentences with ah all the time. I used to end sentences with ah all the time. Ah. Like that. I take them out nowadays mostly. I think I say ah a lot less. I think so. I do take them out a lot because I don't want to listen to them. I want to be able to listen to this shit. It's not just for you. I listen to this shit. I like to listen to my own podcast. Call me old fashioned. I'm going to say something. It's going to be something worth saying. So I want to listen back and hear what I have to say for myself. Because for one thing, I don't remember half of it until I go back and listen to it. And then, so I have to edit it before I listen to it. To make it vaguely listenable for me, for my tastes. I don't know. So no, don't go, Anyway, that's for you. I think that was around episode 116 or thereabouts. And that would have come out sometime in the late 2000s. Now, those of you who remember the 2000s may remember. How many popes ago was that? I think maybe two popes ago, was it? How many popes deep are we into my life? My first pope was Pope John Paul. And then there was your man who retired. And then there was Francis. And then there was the American fella who's there now. So I'm four popes deep into my life at this stage. So I don't know how many popes there are going to be left in 50. Keep telling us. They've been saying it since I was about 10. There's written somewhere that there were going to be two more popes and then that's it. That's the end of popes. It's just all over. That's the end. They're done and dusted. It'd be like when Mikhail Gorbachev was the last leader of the USSR and then done. So what happens then? I don't know. Maybe it's like when Russia takes over and so a bishop maybe will take over, an archbishop somewhere will take over. So they won't need a pope anymore because Russia is smaller than the USSR. So they're just the biggest country. They were just the biggest country, you know, and then they take over as they take over the buildings or something. Is that what they did? They took over that onion building, I think. Now, this might be all nonsense. I might be misremembering it or not understanding it. But if I remember rightly, Russia was a successor state to the USSR. They took over most of it and then all the little countries broke off. And then they had that place with the onions. Oh, wait, is that India? Does Russia have the Kremlin? Is that the place with the onions? The building, their government buildings and things, their parliament, they have these roofs that are shaped like onions. Is that a thing? Is that India? I think that's Russia. Oh, that's Russia. The onions. Yeah, that's Russia. Russia is the onions. And the onions used to also be the main seat of government of the whole USSR. Now, I don't know much about the politics of it. Don't really care. It's not my thing. Suffice to say that Gorbachev was like, if there were making predictions about the last pope, the last pope would be the equivalent of Gorbachev. As Gorbachev is to the USSR, the last pope would be that to the papacy. But then, so what would happen to Roman Catholic Church would disband a bit, but whoever's the biggest member state of the Roman Catholic Church would become the new thing, and that'd be like Russia. This isn't making any sense. For one thing, the main seat of government of it's not a country, but the main headquarters of the that church is the Vatican, one of the smallest countries in the world. So they will become the main thing in that thing. And is there a tiny little country that will break off? I don't know. Is there a bishop? Oh, wait, though. The Bishop of Rome is the Pope. The Pope is also, oh, they have that covered. No, yeah, this wouldn't work. The Bishop of Rome is also the Pope. So there wouldn't be a Gorbachev is the equivalent of the Pope. And when he goes away, it hands down to whoever the Bishop of Russia is. No. The successors, they have that all tied up and wrapped up with string. So it can't be, yeah, they have that well planned, for Christ's sake. So if you brought down the Pope, you brought down the whole papacy, the Bishop of Rome would take over, but the Bishop of Rome also happens to be the Pope. Isn't that right? That's fucking ridiculous. He's American and he's the Bishop of Rome. Why isn't he the Archbishop of Rome? Maybe he is as well. There used to be, you know, there's usually an Archbishop and they're above the Bishop. There's the Bishop of, so he's the Bishop of Rome and the Pope, but nothing in between. That's like in Richard Branson. He runs this whole huge mega corporation. He's the head chief executive, but he also mans the phones somewhere in some call center for virgin brides or whatever he does. But he doesn't do any of the jobs in between. He does the big fancy big wig job at the top. And then he does the little call center job as well. So he's the Bishop of Rome and the Pope, but you're not anything in between. The Archbishop of Rome is somewhere else, is he? And then the Bishop of Rome gets promoted above him. I'd be pissed off with that if I was the Archbishop. Or maybe the Vatican as a country is so small it's not considered big enough for an Archbishop. That's why they have a Bishop. I suppose there's that. They just have one. Oh, now that makes sense. There'd only be, it's a small country, the Vatican. There wouldn't be enough room for loads of separate bishop areas, whatever you call them. What are they called? Diocese. It's like a bishopry division of a country. Most countries are divided into dioceses. The Vatican is too small to be divided into dioceses. So they just need a bishop because it's one diocese. A diocese has a bishop. They don't need an archbishop because there's only one diocese. So then you have the Pope. And so the Pope is also the Bishop of Rome. He's not getting in the, it's no archbishop in the middle who's going to get left out of all that. I suppose that's good. Because they don't have the onions thing in the Vatican. But they have fancy buildings. I was in the Vatican about 2 weeks after Pope John Paul died. It was great. I just met my wife. We went on our first ever holiday was to Rome. We had pasta at 11 o'clock in the morning. It was a whole new experience for me. You go around to this place, you sit down at a table outside some cafe, you think we'll have a coffee or a beverage of some kind, and then the menu comes along and says, oh look, try this big huge bowl of fresh pasta, it'd be great, you've never had pasta before, we're the only people in the world who know how to make pasta, we here in Rome, so while you're here, come and get it, you'll probably never come here again, it's a one in a lifetime opportunity to try some pasta. And I did try. It was absolutely fucking delicious. But that's I don't know. Seems like I don't think pasta should be a morning 11th's food, though. The morning 11th's food you should be having is an individually wrapped biscuit bar. Yeah, well, if you're out, I suppose. If you're having 11th's, your morning break at work. You don't have pasta for that, but you have a individually wrapped biscuit bars. That's what those are designed for. Yeah, you dip it in your tea or your coffee and you shove it down your gullet and say, oh, this is great. I'm off my feet for 8 minutes and then I've only another 3 hours until lunchtime. And then when it gets to lunchtime, I can go out. I have half an hour or 40 minutes, whatever it is in the modern workplace. You get up. You go out to some place, you stand in some shop and you queue for this sandwich counter. You queue for the sandwich counter. You spend half the year break queuing for it. But it's worth it. You're going to get a nice sandwich made for you. You get to the top of the queue and then you say, if I give you some money, will you make me a sandwich? I'll tell you what to put in it. You have to tell them what to put in it. They're sandwich experts, but you still have to tell them what to put in it because they think you know better than them. You tell them, put some butter on it. Wait, first get some bread. You have to say what kind of bread. Do you want brown bread? Do you want white bread? Do you want... I think those are the only two types of bread. Now, I would have brown bread. Oh, yes, you say whether you want a brown roll or a brown round thing. What's that, a bap? A roll or a bap? And do you want a white or brown? You're probably supposed to say wholemeal or air, filled with air. I don't know. You tell them what bread you want, and then you tell them you want butter on it, and then you tell them put some turkey on it, and put some tomatoes on it, and put some lettuce on it, and put some cheese on it, and put some mayonnaise on it, and put some whatever you think. You're the expert. You're the sandwich expert. Even though I would argue a roll is not a sandwich. A roll is maybe a bap is somewhat a sandwich. But a roll, no, a big long stick roll thing, no. That's not a sandwich. That's a thing that you slice it open along one side and you cram stuff into the crevice that you've made. And you hope to Christ there's enough room for us so you can close it over. That's the thing with those things, do you? Sometimes I think you're better off if you scooped out the insides of the roll, then put the filling in and then put the scooped out insides of the roll in on top of that to keep it steady. Put a couple of elastic bands around it. A bit of that paper they put around the roll, that's not holding anything together. No. You want a couple of toothpicks, maybe, but those are dangerous. You can accidentally eat one of them or accidentally stab yourself in the neck while you're trying to eat it, and you get that thing you give yourself a tracheotomy when you're almost certainly not in need of a tracheotomy. That's not good. Of course, that's why the workplace wants you to go out for your sandwich, because if you give yourself the emergency tracheotomy while you're out queuing at the sandwich shop that's not part of the workplace, then it's not a workplace accident, so they don't have to worry about that. So they want you to go out to these sandwich shops, and you're very obliging. You do. You go out. You know, as if you go to your work canteen, they're not making rolls like that. No, they're making any canteen I've ever worked in. Well, I didn't work in the canteen, but I worked in places that had canteens. Oh, it was all these dinner-type things. They say, here's a bit of chicken and a bit of ham and a bit of potato and a bit of bread on a plate. Have a glass of milk with that, and then go down and sit there and then be all satisfied with yourself because you don't have to cook in the evening then. That was the idea with those. Some of them were subsidised. I remember the first place I worked, you had a subsidised canteen. You give them, I think it was 4 old Irish pounds in those days, and you get, you might get a bit of fish in breadcrumbs, and then you get to say, what vegetables do you want? And you say, I'd like those ones there, whatever they are. I would never figure out these things where you queue and you tell them what to put on your dinner plate. Say, what? I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. Can I just have some potatoey stuff and some whatever you think of the vegetable-y stuff and whatever that is? And they'll do that. Well, no, you're supposed to. You look at these 12 boxes that all have stuff in them and spoons sticking out of them that they're getting the stuff out of. They're scooping up this stuff and putting it on your face. I don't know what any of it is. How would I know? I didn't make it. If I knew what any of that stuff I'd be working as the chef there. That's what I'd be doing. So stop with that shit. So that's sandwiches for you, is it? Oh yes, the Vahagan. That's what I was on to. Yeah, we're done with the Vahagan thing now. Weirdly. Funny I should compare it to Russia. Is there some sort of... Does Russia have their own pope? Is that a different thing? Is there a Coptic pope or something? I seem to remember there's a fella who goes around. He has a kind of skull cap thing, but he also has a kind of an aerial coming up out of it. It's like a metal rod or something, vertical, coming out of the middle of the top of his head, with a kind of little flat round thing on the bottom. It looks like it's some... I always thought they were very cool. I've no idea what a Coptic pope is, but I really like what they have in their heads. And if I was setting up a church of any kind, I would go for that. It looks cool. I bet you the kids in wherever they have their Coptic pope, I don't know, maybe it's Russia, maybe it's somewhere else. Well, I bet you the kids there, when they're growing up and they see their pope on the television going around in his pope mobile, presumably with his sunroof, or else he'd have to take that off. Oh, wait, did I accidentally just copy something out of Family Guy? I think there's a Family Guy episode or is it The Simpsons, where there's a Coptic pope and he's going round and he's getting into his car and one of his assistants folds up the aerial thing that's on his head so he doesn't, just as he gets into the car. Although I wasn't copying that because I didn't say anything about folding or over and getting it into the car. I just said he'd need a sunroof. And although if it's just a sunroof and there's still a, you still have to duck under the car frame when you're getting into the car. But you wouldn't necessarily need it to fold down. I don't know the practicalities of these things. I suppose you could have your hat aerial thing built into the roof of the car, into the fabric of the sunroof or something. Does a sunroof have fabric? Well, presumably it has a curtain. So you don't want to be... If you have a sun window in your... I've never been in a car that has a sunroof. But I imagine on a very bright day when the sun is shining down you from overhead, you need either blinds or curtains on that thing. So there'd be fabric involved somewhere, and if you could have a separate skull cap and aerial that's for travelling, and it's built into the fabric of the blind. So when he's getting into the car, he takes off his normal hat that's like that, and then he just puts his head into the hat that's built into the blind. I know I'm not explaining it very well. You know, you see on hospital dramas sometimes, like House, some fella would get a very, very, very dangerous infection and they'd put him in isolation. This separate room, they'd isolate him, and all the doctors and nurses who were attending to him, they couldn't enter the room, but they'd have these gloves that were built into the fabric of the wall or something, like curtains, but there's gloves built in, and they'd put their hands into them. And you'd use those gloves to attend to the patient. I'd be like that with the fabric of the blind on the Coptic Pope's car sunroof. He'd put his head into that, and then that would be his hat for when he's travelling around, looking out of the sunroof, waving at everybody, and less chance of infection as well. Probably make a bulletproof first of that, could you? I don't know. Can you make? You probably can. Would it be soft enough to be usable? I don't know. Maybe make it more of a helmet, I suppose. Anyway, that's that. Is that that? I think that's that. If you're listening to this from a stairwell, not necessarily on a stairs, you might just be in a stairwell. They build a stairwell first. And then they build the stairs shortly after. You might be at the stage where there's just a stairwell. Let's assume for the moment that you're in this stairwell and the stairs has been installed. They've built the stairs. There's probably some ugly industrial concrete stairs if it's an office building. Nobody uses the stairs in an office building. Stairs are for losers. Most of the people in an office building are being paid for their time. They're giving up the best hours of the best days of the best years of their lives. They're going into some godforsaken hellhole office in this building at 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning and staying there until it gets dark. And then going home, they're not going to want to, unless you're paying them specifically to use the stairs, they're not going to use the stairs if there's an elevator. They'll use the elevator. They'll say, oh, look, I have to go up to the 8th floor now. Will I climb up 8 flights of stairs for which I don't get any kind of extra compensation? I don't get a stairs climbing bonus. No, I'm going to use the elevator. It's not like my company gets an extra bill for the electricity used in the communal elevator that's shared by the whole building. No, how would that even work? I've never been involved in the administration of the rental of office space in a large building or any other building. But from what I gather, you don't get a bill from the landlord saying, here's your share of the electricity used by the elevators. You've got software installed that measures how many people are going to your floor, and we count those into your bill. We have a meter installed. No. Would you do it in a way whereby the people going to the 8th floor are paying extra? If they're going to the 8th floor anyway, and the people on the 2nd floor are going to the 2nd floor, the people on the 2nd floor perhaps should go for free. It's like giving someone a lift, because you're going there anyway. So they should pay for that trip to the 8th floor, and the people who happen to be sharing the lift with you, who are only going to the 2nd floor. If that seems unfair, we could do it so that the 2nd floor and the 1st floor are some sort of business incubator. And then when you've been incubated and you're on your feet after a year or two, you're required to move up to the 8th floor and pay proper elevator fees for at least a year as part of your contract. That would be a way to do it. My first ever office job was on the 10th floor of a building in a city whose tallest building at the time was something like 15 stories. It was very exciting. The office was completely surrounded by windows overlooking Dublin. It was fascinating. I lived on a mountain once when I was a child and a teenager. I lived on a small mountain beside the sea in the outer suburbs of Dublin. If that mountain had been moved into the city centre, it would have had a similar view to what we had from that building. Maybe you built a bungalow on top of it and put an office building in there. The view out that window would be spectacular. But then you go out the door and, well, you're not in the city centre anymore. You've covered it in mountain. That wouldn't be sustainable because you're the only business in the city now. You can't have a whole public transport system that's just for one business that's got a bungalow on top of a mountain. No. Anyway, if you are listening to this in the stairwell of an otherwise unbuilt building where there's just they've built the stairs and the part of the frame that holds the stairs up. So you're in there, you're on the stairs, you're walking up. Presumably you're a construction worker of some kind and you've built the stairs. Or maybe they send in stair specialists before the rest of the builders come in and that's already been done. Maybe you've no involvement in the making of the stairs. Maybe they buy the stairs ready built, a big lump of concrete with steps cut into it. Maybe they do that and they just lift it up on the crane and just shove it in, cement it in and glue it in and say, that's great, that's the stairs. It's not the Sistine Chapel, it doesn't have to be fancy. Does the Sistine Chapel have stairs? I don't even know. Does it? Why would it need to? It's not an office block. Sistine Chapel is, I presume, some sort of church. I used to go to churches. They're usually a one-story thing. Maybe at the back sometimes there's a place where they put the organ and the choir, and that's a kind of balcony that has a stairs going up to it. But nobody goes up there. That's just for the staff and the volunteers and the people who are doing the singing. The organ operator, of course, he or she would be going up the stairs. Go up the stairs and go, have you got an organ here? Good. Because I didn't bring my own, I can't be carting my organ all over to every church where I'm needed. No. Do you have an organ grinder? What's an organ grinder? Is that some sort of derogatory thing? I know they say organ grinder as a derogatory thing, but is there an actual real thing called an organ grinder that's some sort of a job that involves the organ. I don't know. Organ as in the thing they play in a church that's like a piano, but it's more like bells and it's fancy. It's a built-in instrument. It's like if they built a guitar into the wall of a church. They made a round window and that's where the sound comes out. The hole in the middle of a guitar behind the strings, they make that as a hole in the wooden panel in the side wall of the church. And they put vertical strings over that. And then someone presumably gets up on a ladder and plays that. Well, they don't, because that doesn't exist. But the organ is very similar in that it's built into the building like that often. I presume it is anyway. I've never actually been up close to a church organ. It's up on a balcony behind our heads. For all we know, it could be being broadcast by satellite from some church somewhere else. We don't even see the organ grinder or whatever it is, the organ musician. No, we just hear it. It just occurred to me the vast majority of listeners to this podcast have probably never been in a church in your lives. Let's see if I can demonstrate. This is a mouth organ, now that I think about it. This harmonica, or mouth organ, I used to call it as a child. So it is an organ in a way. So let's see if we can recreate this. And the priest will say something like, we'll now sit down and make ourselves comfortable and sit in silence while we watch everybody else go up and get their wafer and kneel down. And I'll finish giving out the wafers and I'll give the chalice a cursory wipe with this weird white towel. I don't know how that works. They give out all the bread and stuff in this chalice, kind of a metal cup thing. And then they have these wine chalices that they give the altar boys a drink out of or something. And then you see the priest wiping this chalice off with a towel, a cursory wipe. If you told a child to do the washing up and he didn't tell them how to do it, they would just get a rag like that. Admittedly a clean looking white rag. But they go and wipe that around the rim of the cup as if that's supposed to help. I don't know. While he's doing that, anyone who's got their wafer has gone back down to their seats and they have a few moments of reflection. Some of them kneel, some of them sit, some of them kneel and look around to see has anyone else got back into their seats yet because their fucking knees are sore or they don't want to be the first person to get up off their knees. The priest is doing the washing up. He's wiping the wine thing with a cloth around the rim. Doesn't rinse it or anything, just wipes it with his white cloth. That's wine. That's a lovely, clean, white cloth, actually, now that I think about it. It's not a filthy rag. It's not like you're using a J-cloth or something that you can throw away after a couple of washes. No. Not one of those little dishcloths that come in a pack of 10 from the supermarket that you only use once or twice, and then you wash them, and then you use them to clean the toilet, and then you throw them in the bin. No. Maybe you use them to clean the toilet, and then, whatever. Never mind that. That's a lovely clean white cloth he was using. Every time I went to Mass as a child, wipe around the rim of this wine thing. Now, is that red wine or white wine? I've just realised I don't know. I think I always pictured it as red wine in my head. Or maybe it's white wine and maybe that's easier to clean. I don't know. Anyway, while he's doing that and everyone's finishing their kneeling and reflection and their letting the bread dissolve in their mouth because it's an evil, evil, disrespectful crime to chew it or anything like that. You have to let it melt. You have to let it stick to the roof of your mouth and just let it blend into your mouth until it's gone. And no swallowing, no chewing, no biting. It's not a snack. It's not there to nourish you in that way. It's meant to nourish you spiritually. I think that's the idea. Anyway, the organ starts up. The priest isn't going to be ready to say anything further for another minute or two, so they have filler. Your American late-night talk shows, David Letterman comes on and he says, we'll be right back after this break. And the band starts playing a song, and then the commercials come on, and then the commercial's finished, and they go back and they show the band just finishing that song. Well, that's what happens in Mass, except you don't get commercials during it. There's a point in the Mass where the priest reads things that are almost commercials. He does community announcements. He says, oh, coming up, there is a mass that you bring your dogs to. You all stand outside the church in the car park with your dogs, and the priest comes out and blesses them or something. He'll make announcements like that, or about a charity coffee morning that's happening next door in the community hall. Or he'll announce that it's someone's anniversary and this mass is for them. They died 73 years ago and someone is still arranging for masses to be said for them every year. Whoever the fuck this is, probably one of the founding fathers of the state. They probably have a great-great-grandson who just puts a card into the priest every year. He says, oh, will you dedicate this mass to his 73rd anniversary? And the priest goes, oh, that name sounds familiar. I saw that in a history book somewhere. Anyway, the organ starts up and it goes something like this. Now, it's played differently to how I play my mouth organ. I play my mouth organ by blowing out air into it and sucking in air through it. I don't think you do that on a church organ. Probably be considered disrespectful. If you started playing an organ that way in a church, the old people would say, oh, that must be one of those young people from one of those rock bands. Like one of those rock bands who thinks it's an electric piano or something. No. You don't want to be doing that. But I think they press buttons on it. But there's air involved somewhere, isn't there? You blow out air through the chimney of the church or something. I don't know. And is the bell system connected in? Because churches have bells in the tower. Is the tower and the bell connected to the organ, I wonder? I'm not sure. That all seems a bit old-fashioned, if you ask me. Not that there's anything wrong with being old-fashioned. Nothing wrong with being old-fashioned. Calling it old-fashioned, that's a bit silly, because it's not fashion if it's so outdated that you're calling it old-fashioned. This is going nowhere. This bollocks is going nowhere. This beat is technotronic. This bollocks is going nowhere. Is that a thing? That was a thing. I'm 1990. I seem to have mislaid my harmonica. In the short time since I played it just now, around 1990 or 89, when I got my first Walkman, I got now 16. Yeah, this beat is technotronic. This beat is technotronic. This beat is technotronic. And there's a dance floor there on it. Something along those lines. I found my harmonica. I don't remember what I was going to do with it. I checked back. It turns out I was going to do a mashup of This Bollocks Is Going Nowhere with This Beat Is Technotronic. That's what I had in mind. I was going to do this, and I will now. This bollocks is going nowhere. This beat is technotronic. This bollocks is going nowhere. This beat is technotronic. This bollocks is going nowhere. And there's a dance floor there on it. Oh, a place to stay. Get your booty on the douche now. Make my day. Oh, a place to stay. Get your booty up in your bush now. Make my day. Is that, I think that's the same song, I'm not sure. Wasn't really my kind of music, but I had. You got compilation tapes in those days for Christmas. Now, before we cause confusion, you Americans have your own version of Now That's What I Call Music compilation albums. I don't know what number you're up to, but you started several years later than this part of the world. In this part of the world, we're up to now 100 and something here in 2025. For once in our lives, we got something before you Americans. So Christmas 1989, I had now 16, and I had Belinda Carlisle talking about leaving the lights on for her. She said, leave the lights on for me, I'll be home before you something, something. Something, something, something. I'll take the key, just leave the light on for me. You had that on. And then you had several of these early kind of rap songs, except they weren't rapping. They were still doing music in those days. You had, I'm not sure this might be being a later album, T-U-R-T-L-E Power. T-U-R-T-L-E Power. T-U-R-T-L-E Power. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And that would cause confusion. Because over here, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were renamed to Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles because ninja was considered controversial. I don't know what ninja means. Apparently it means something terrible. Apparently it's as bad as putting the F word in the middle of one of your children's cartoons. So they called it Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles here. So ninjas not heroes. I suppose it depends what they do with their ninja abilities. I hear people talking about ninja. I'm never quite sure what it means. Because, I mean, they've got some ability to creep up your... Maybe it's like the spiders or something. They have some ability to creep up your drain pipe and up through your toilet and up into your airspace inside your house like a ninja. So they probably say that's like a ninja. But that doesn't tell me what a ninja is. It's no point telling me it's like a ninja if I don't know what a ninja is. I don't know what a ninja is. Is it supposed to be some fella going around with a mask thing that goes over your eyes, but for some reason your eyes still shine through it? The turtles had these things. I don't think you can call them bandanas. They went across their eyes, if I remember rightly. The bandana went across their eyes and was tied at the back, but you could see their eyes through it. Of course, if you're a cartoon, you have these eyeballs that protrude outside of your eye socket. Bulging eyes, presumably because it looks better in animation. Do you still have eye sockets behind those eyeballs and are they empty? That would be a breeding ground for all sorts of infections. You don't want infections up there. That's right beside your brain. You don't want empty eye sockets and then have your eyeballs on the outside of the eye sockets. No matter how good they might look, no matter how friendly they look to children watching this in a cartoon, I don't think you want that, do you? Maybe you do. The children probably want it because they think it's cool. Someday when plastic surgery becomes as easily available as sweet in the local shop, or maybe they'll start doing it in the barber shops, kids will all start getting surgery to have their eyeballs moved to the outside of their face so they're bulging out the front. Maybe they'll use the space behind to store their phones or something or get some sort of implant. That sounds very dangerous to me, especially since nobody's going to get their vaccinations anymore. You don't want a big breeding ground for infection right behind your eyes. Trust me, you don't want that. For one thing, that's right beside your sinuses. You get an infection up there that just gets in the back of everything. When they were getting COVID, you used to have to get your test and they'd shove the thing right up your nose and right up nearly into your brain. I suppose that would make it more accessible if there was empty eye sockets. No, because then you'd have to pull it in around the eyes. If the eyes are protruding and they're not resting inside the eye socket, you put your little test kit in around the side of the eyeball so it can access the space behind it. There's a high chance that you might accidentally scoop the eyeball out. And that's less likely to happen if your eyes are sitting in eye sockets rather than bulging out. Now, of course, the turtles, this was in the 90s, so they didn't have to worry about stuff like that. But still, it's a worry now. Well, it's not really a worry, it's a load of bollocks. If you want your children to watch educational television, and they won't, you could at least get them to watch that fucking annoying turtles, a learning opportunity to teach them all about looking after the space around your eyes and why having bulging eyes out protruding on the outside of your face is not as good an idea as you might think it is. Maybe our schools should be doing that, though. Oh, wait a minute, they're turtles. That's why they don't need to protect their eyes. They have shells. Their whole body is protected by a hard shell. That's now it makes sense. They don't need their eyes to be protected inside an eye socket because their whole self can be enveloped in this hat shell thing. They call it a hat shell in the theme song. They say heroes in a hat shell. And the hat shell that those turtles have would be too big for their head. You might think big is better because it covers up more of you. If you put that over your head can still knock around inside that. That's as bad as having a small brain inside a big skull. So if you're in a big hat shell that's designed for a whole turtle and you're putting that over your head like a helmet, that's not effective. And also, I don't think that's enough protection for your eyes that don't have eye sockets protecting them. No, I don't think so. You'd have to spend 99% of the time inside the hatch shell, or else you're not protected properly at all. Those bulging eyes that are not in an eye socket, they need to be protected all the time. People who are in an iron lung, they can come out for periods every day, but they have to spend most of their time inside it. I was incorrect in assuming that you're a construction worker if you happen to be in a newly created stairwell of an otherwise not built office building. No, you could well be one of those louts, those absolute louts, those out of control teenagers and early 20s men who you see on YouTube who sneak into these skyscraper building sites at night. They basically break in, which is easy to do because there's no doors yet. It's a building site. They sneak in at night to one of these buildings where there's just the stairs and nothing else built yet. And they creep up the stairs. They have their camera thing with them. They're filming this for YouTube. They creep up the stairs. They get to the very top of this building that's not a building yet. It's just a frame. And then sometimes there's a crane above the building. They jump up onto the crane and then they climb along the arm of the crane right to the end. There's one lunatic who hangs off the crane and then hangs off the crane with one hand. It's above an unbuilt skyscraper over a city about 3 miles up in the sky. He does this. He doesn't have any safety lines or anything. He has this backpack and he has a camera, and there's clearly something wrong with him because he's not scared. He just hangs off this crane. Some of them just climb up the crane. They don't go into the building at all. They just, the crane is on the ground and they start at the bottom of the crane and they climb up it. Now, to be fair, a crane is designed to be climbed by the crane operator. They don't go into the cabin of the crane. Maybe that's some legal advice where they say if you don't go into the cabin, then you're not breaking and entering. You're just climbing on the outside of this vehicle. They go right along to the end of the arm and they sit there going, whoa, this is so cool. This is great. This is great. Look at me. I'm going to be dead before I'm 25. Isn't this great? And everybody's just watching to see if they die. Which is a little silly, because if they die, then there's no footage. They're filming themselves, so if they die, you never get to see the footage. There's always some kid, and he says, this is great. I found a great new not-built skyscraper. I'm going to climb up this thing. I'm going to go up the stairs at first. Some small concession to normality. I'll walk up the stairs like it's designed to do, even though there's no building there. Yes, there's the stairs. I sneaked into this not a building. Where are the parents? That's what I want to know. If your 25-year-old is going out climbing cranes at 4 o'clock in the morning, you need to do something about that. I know you're thinking, that's an adult. A 25-year-old is an adult. They're not a child anymore. I'm not supervising them. Or they're climbing up that because you failed to raise them properly. So you need to go back and continue raising them until they're properly done. You think you've raised them to completion when they're 18 or 21 or whatever. But if you find out at 25 that they're climbing up a crane in the middle of the night, that means you've fucked something up. If you're in a restaurant and they bring out your steak and it's not done properly, the chef doesn't get to say, well, I left it in for 3 minutes, and if it's 3 minutes, it's done. But then he brings it out and it's not done. You say, that's not done yet. You need to bring it back. It doesn't stop being your responsibility after the 3 minutes are up if it's not done properly yet. You failed. You're a fucking failure. That's what you are. A fucking, that's interesting. I lost a tooth this week. The remaining part of a tooth. And I go, fucking failure. Something interesting happens there. It's probably not very nice to listen to, so don't worry. I won't make a habit of that. We'll stick to the dog thing, because we know where we're going with the dog thing. Where I go, once upon a time there was a dog. The fun I have with that is probably very annoying, but less disgusting. I don't mind if it's annoying, as long as it's not disgusting. I don't wish to disgust you. I do not wish to disgust you. I just wish to, well, I don't wish to annoy you either. It's only mock annoying. If I go, once upon a time, there was a dog. A dog. A dog, a dog, a dog, a dog, basically a dog. And this dog, he was walking along the street one day, minding his own business, and then a 25-year-old man who hadn't been raised to completion fell on his head and killed the dog. Killed the dog, and the man survived. So the dog's owner probably thinks their dog is a hero now. Your dog isn't a hero. In the right place at the right time, by accident, and probably didn't even intend to. If that dog had known that he was going to catch that man falling from the crane at that moment, would your dog have still done it? No, I think he wouldn't. You tell a dog, there's a man going to fall from the sky any minute now because he's been climbing on the crane. I want you to be in that spot at that time so he can land on you. You can break his fall and break your everything and then you'll die, but at least the human survives. No dog would agree to that. I hope they wouldn't anyway. Would you? I don't know much about dogs, to be honest, but I know people like to make out that they're a man's best friend and they're all like Lassie. Lassie the dog, or the littlest hobo, or not so much Skippy the bush kangaroo. Does Skippy the bush kangaroo rescue people and do heroic stuff? I don't remember. Does Flipper the dolphin rescue people and do hero stuff? I can't remember either. Those are four different programs that I watched as a child that were all about supposedly helpful animals. I know Lassie and the Littlest Hobo, they were both helpful animals. Now, Flipper and Skippy the kangaroo, I'm not so sure. Was Skippy just there because he had a pocket? And people like to use their pockets. The young people, this was back in the 70s, of course, 70s or 80s when Skippy was on. Pockets hadn't gone out of fashion yet, so wasn't really needed that much. Now, people used to go around going, oh, I like pockets. They go, well, they wouldn't say I like pockets. The jean denim trouser, part of its charm used to be that it had excellent pockets, had an excellent array of pockets. Some of them even have a pocket within a pocket. Inside your right front pocket of your jeans is a little pocket. I'm not sure what that's for, your keys or something. I'm sure it was for something where you put change in there. I'm sure there was some thinking behind it. Part of the thing about jeans, especially if you're one of the bigger people who wear jeans like me. Actually, that's the reason to get fat, incidentally, that may never ever occur to you skinny people. Whatever clothing I get, if I get the same clothing as you, or in my size, same style of clothing, the pockets are automatically bigger. It's absolutely great. For much of my adult life, I've always had excellent large pockets, no matter what kind of trousers I wear. I carry a big heavy phone around in my pocket all day, have a wallet in there as well, have a bunch of keys in the other pocket. I'm not a fan of the back pockets. The back pockets are a temporary place to put stuff. The best use of a back pocket is if you're carrying stuff in and out to the car and you want to remind yourself to lock the car. So you put your keys in your back pocket so that when you're finished and you sit down, that'll remind you. You'll feel a little stab in your buttock and you'll think, oh, that reminds me, I have to lock the car. That's how you remember things. Little things like that is how you remember things. If you ever have the good fortune to become morbidly obese, there's an advantage to that. There's an advantage to that. Get over the thing about having tight fit jeans. That's ridiculous. You want to be comfortable. Even if you're not big, you've a normal size frame and you're getting jeans. Don't go around getting tight fit ones. That's fucking ridiculous. You're not there to strangle your undercarriage. You're not there to strangle your under. That's self-harm. If you're wearing tight jeans or tight anything else, that's self-harm. And you should bring yourself to your doctor about that. You say, doctor, I've just realised I've been involved in self-harm all my adult life. Well, at least since I was about 12. As an adolescent, I was just following peer pressure and the fashion of the day. Well, as an adult now, I seem to be still doing this, wearing tight jeans to squash me to bits. I've just realised it's self-harm. Please send me to a mental institution so I can get this dealt with. And your doctor will applaud you for that. He'd say, oh, that's great. You're taking a very, very, very good first step. Very good first step. Well done. That's great. Absolutely. Why am I reaching for my harmonica at this? I don't know. No, this isn't a musical number. Why am I reaching for my harmonica? Maybe I'm just checking his tear. That's probably it. I'm just checking. I brought it back. I have a special place for my harmonica in here on this table. Little plastic tray that's clamped to this table so I don't lose it. I put the harmonica in one side of it so I can find it easily. It's there now. It's where it should be. I'll tell you what you can't do that with. And that's a church organ. Now, I don't know if this segment is going to fall before or after the discussion about church organs. So let's not go any further into that, except to say a harmonica is a portable church organ. It's a mouth organ. I'm not even sure that this instrument I play is called a harmonica, because I look her up. I search for harmonica sometimes online, and sometimes you find harmonicas, but sometimes it redirects you to something called a harpsichord. And I thought a harpsichord was a harp, but no, apparently it's something else. I get very confused about this. I've been an harmonica owner for all of my married life. I've had a harmonica since I was in my late 20s when I started this podcast. And I also had a harmonica as a child that I got as a birthday present. So I had that at least 68% of my life so far. I've been a harmonica owner, but I've never been entirely sure whether that's what it's called. My father called it a mouth organ. I've seen harpsichord used for things. I thought that was something different. Someone says, here's your harp, and you find they're talking about a mouth organ or a harmonica. I don't know. It's very confusing. I don't tell people in real life about my harmonica usage. I'm afraid they'll say, wait, did you just say harmonica when you meant harpsichord? And then you'll say, wait, no, I've never played a harp. A harp is that big wooden thing with strings, and it's in the shape of the Irish official emblem. In this country, everything you get in the post involving tax or welfare or your public health care or anything like that, it all comes in a brown envelope with a harp printed in the middle on the top. That's the official emblem, and that's a harp. It's a musical instrument. I know, I hear people saying harp as short for harpsichord, and I think they mean a harmonica. I don't know. I'm probably going to find this out when I'm 85 and I'm no longer podcasting and my mouth doesn't work anymore and it's too late to start referring it to it as anything properly. I have hundreds and hundreds of archived podcasts under my belt, all tucked away and archived on archive.org, all mentioning this instrument that I play, but with the wrong name on it. And it'll be too late to do anything about it. That's a shame, isn't it? I think that's a shame. Do you think that's a shame? You probably do. I think that's a shame, as I believe I just said. Maybe you don't think it's a shame. I know it's not a shame in that it doesn't affect you or your content in any way. It affects me and my content and my satisfaction as to this body of work.
Into your head.
Now, I know what you're thinking there. You're thinking, wait a minute. Wait a fucking goddamn minute. Wait a bit, slow down, put your foot on the brake, take your foot off the accelerator and wait. Wait, just wait. Pretend there's a red light there. Traffic light, not the other type of red light. A red traffic light. Pretend you're at a red traffic light and slow down and just hold on. You're thinking, hold on a goddamn minute. Just slow the world down for a minute. We don't have to be moving at a huge pace all the time. I know we're flying through the universe at a great speed. Nothing we can do about that. And I know we're orbiting the sun at a great speed. Nothing we can do about that. And I know the world is rotating at a great speed. Well, once every 24 hours. Nothing we can do about that. But one thing we can do is to slow down whatever is coming out of your own mouth and your body. You can slow your mouth and body down and your brain. Well, I can't slow my brain or mouth down very much at the moment because I've had a lot of energy drinks and coffee, as I always do before this podcast. But everyone else can slow themselves down. That's what you're thinking. Well, why are you thinking that? I should be thinking that. I'm the one who can't slow myself down because I've had all the energy drinks and coffee. I'm saying I know what you're thinking. You're thinking that. No, I'm wrong then. You're not thinking that. Why would you be thinking that? It's me that should be thinking that. Unless you've got some disorder where you're not sure whether you're me or you're you. You listen to my voice and you think, because of some condition, no fault of your own, you can't help it. You've got some condition where you're listening to a voice and you can never remember, is that voice me or is that someone else? I can never remember which of us is me. You hear yourself and you hear someone else. And in fact, you don't hear yourself because you're not talking at the moment. You're just thinking, I'm the only one who's talking. So you're sitting in a room somewhere on your own. You hear my voice. And of course, the brain is not a perfect machine. It gets confused. It thinks, I can hear one voice. I'm the only person in the room, so that must be me. So you're listening to this half the time thinking, that's me. Why am I saying all that stuff? What the fuck? It sounds like I'm listening to this. I'm listening to me talking. Firstly, it doesn't sound like me. Sounds over-caffeinated for one thing. Well, I sound different, but it has to be me. I'm the only one in the room. There's no one else here. And I hear a voice, so that must be me. Why am I talking like that? I didn't even know I had a podcast. I'm not a podcaster. I've been branded a podcaster because it's a misuse of the term. There are people who wrongly refer to people who listen to podcasts as podcasters, which of course most of us know is completely incorrect. The podcaster is the person who's making the podcast, not the person who's listening. Celebrities who started podcasting about 10 years ago, they're the ones who get confused and they refer to podcast listeners as podcasters. But no, you're there in that room on your own. You only hear one voice. So of course you're going to think, especially if you have the lights off and you've got soundproofing, so you would be a good example of someone who shouldn't enter Joe Rogan's sensory deprivation chamber, if he asks you. Joe Rogan likes to invite his guests after he's met them for the first time ever and they've come to his studio. He casually mentions a couple of hours in, oh, if you stay around after the show, I can lock you into my weird tank in the attic, his sensory deprivation. I highly recommend it. It's great. They invariably politely decline. But if you're one of those people sitting there on your own in your room and you hear one voice and you're not entirely sure that it's not you, you certainly shouldn't use a sensory deprivation chamber. Because you get very confused then. You hear nothing. You hear absolutely nothing. You think, oh, I mustn't exist. I suppose that's what you're going for if you're doing the meditation in the sensory deprivation chamber. No, you should avoid that. If you do listen to something in the sensory deprivation chamber, then you're going to think that's you. Because you don't, there's nothing else going on in there. So you see the darkness and the blackness and you think, oh, that must be me. There's no one else in here. That must be me. Anyway, hello.